Welcome to episode 430 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Richard.
Can I kind of like label this one the mustache edition?
Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice your mustache. I haven't been looking very closely at you, and it's been in a little tiny window.
Yeah, it's Movember. So, it is Movember. You know, I am growing my mustache for the Movember Foundation. If you don't know what it is, check it out on the web. It's a good cause, supports men's health issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, this is the point in the show where we are going to cover all of the feedback that we've received from all of you wonderful listeners. All of this feedback was sent in at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Nope.
And we're done with that.
Nope. Yeah, not this week. Not this week. But we did get a message to us through Twitter that was then quickly deleted. So I'm kind of assuming that the person that sent it already figured out the answer. But because it was such a good question, I thought I would repeat it here. So someone on Twitter asked us and then deleted it, what is the software that fixes all the problems with iTunes?
There is no software that fixes iTunes. It's garbage.
Well, I think that is a fair statement. However, I believe that what he was asking about was iHome Server. And iHome Server is a server product that you can run on and always on PC or on a Windows server product that essentially works in tandem with iTunes on that device and helps manage your library and helps make it available through other services like DLNA and other ways of managing that library. So I use this. It's still a thing. They have a really, I think, good website where they provide you with information about it. You may remember we had the iHome Server inventor and developer on the show. Man, I think it was like 2 years ago now.
But oh, I bet it was longer than that.
Yeah, it might be. But this is still an actively maintained product and something that you should look into if you're looking for a way of using iTunes better. And I honestly think this is a better way of using iTunes.
Awesome. Nice recommendation. Pulling one out of the old memory banks there. Well, maybe not for you since you still use it, I guess.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's a testament to how good it is. All right. So that is it for our feedback. Again, on Twitter, we're at DigiMediaZone. Our email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone. So let's move on to some video news, just a little bit here. And unfortunately, it's not good news. This is going to kick off some of our Xbox One X news. Apparently, the Xbox One X is having some issues with HDR video, high dynamic range video, from Ultra HD Blu-ray disc and from Netflix. And Richard and the rest of you listeners are probably wondering, Josh, did you find this? Nope, didn't find this. I haven't tried either of these things on my Xbox One X, which I do have now, but I didn't try either of these. I discovered this actually when Mike Ibarra, program manager, I don't know, he's some bigwig in the Xbox department, tweeted that they've found the issue and that they're fixing it. What is the issue? Well, basically, the black levels are insanely not black. They're way bright. If you would normally have black bars at the bottom and top of a movie, they're not really black anymore. They're more like gray. And all of the blacks are very gray and very bright.
Oh, wow.
And so the whole thing looks a lot more washed out. So they're working on that. They've got a fix coming. Today is Tuesday. Yesterday is when Mike Ibarra tweeted about this and said, a fix is coming within a few days. So my guess is by the end of the week, so if you're listening to this via podcast form, it might already be available.
Well, that's good news. I wasn't actually thinking, Josh, did you find this? I was thinking, man, I'm glad I didn't get the new Xbox.
Well, it's a device that doesn't make any sense for you at all,
right?
Since it's really only benefits gamers. But yeah, that would really stink for you who just uses your Xbox for things like UHD, Blu-rays, and... Well, and do you even use the streaming stuff much, or are you getting your 4K streaming from other sources?
I do use the streaming stuff the most from that device, because that's the only 4K device other than my TV that is plugged into my receiver, and the only way to get this, I don't know, unbranded HDR that I get plus Atmos audio is if I'm using that device. So right. It works out well for me. I'm using it a lot for Blu-rays, for streaming services, and you know, we'll see if I continue to use it as much once I finally get the Apple TV 4K, but who knows. But I digress. Xbox One X, tell us about it. You have one.
Yeah, it's nice. It's really nice. I like it a lot. You know, I don't think I need to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, how great it is with games. The games look a lot better. Games run better. I've got some of the Xbox One X enhanced games, like Final Fantasy 15, which I finally started playing. It looks gorgeous. I don't think I really need to get into that. We know it. We knew it was going to run a lot better, and it does. The thing that I wanted to point out is how great of a job Microsoft really did in thinking about the initial setup experience for this, especially for people who are coming from other Xboxes. We talked about some of this before, but there's at least one aspect of this that I didn't really mention at the time because I didn't know it was a thing. But if you already have an Xbox and you get an Xbox One X, you can throw all of your games on an external hard drive and copy them over that way, or don't copy them at all because they can just play right off the hard drive. And it's basically the same load times on the external hard drive or the internal. So either way, that works. That's cool. They also added that network transfer functionality, which is what I used. Worked out really well. I had hundreds of gigs worth of games to transfer, and it transferred pretty stinking quick. You know, there were times when, like, it was kind of weird that it fluctuated even across the gigabit network. Like, sometimes it would be up at, like, you know, 500 megabits per second, which transfers games pretty quickly. But it usually averaged out to around, like, 230 megabits per second, which is still about 10 times faster than I can normally download from the Xbox servers. So that made the transferring of it way, way faster of all of those huge games.
Nice.
And then the other thing that I think is really cool that I don't think I mentioned before, but you can transfer your profile. So all of your setting stuff, you could save that to an external hard drive. And then if you plugged that hard drive into your Xbox One X before you turned it on for the first time, it would detect that profile stuff and just automatically pull it in for you. Wow. And that is so smart. And it makes the setup go way faster. Like, the only real downside to the initial setup, and this is one that we're super used to across basically every piece of consumer electronics that we buy nowadays, is that the first time you turn it on, it's got an update. So it had like a, I don't know, 400 or 500 meg update, which is kind of big, but for most people buying an Xbox One X, probably not that big of a deal, because if you're buying an Xbox One X, dude, you better have a good internet connection, because those games are going to take a long time to download from the store if you don't.
Right. Now, something that I'm curious about, and I'll talk about this a little bit more later in this episode, did you have to re-authenticate all of your video apps, or did that come along with your profile stuff?
You know, the unfortunate thing is that I never did the profile stuff. I didn't use the external hard drive thing, and I wasn't even sure if the profile thing could somehow be transferred over the network. And I just never even thought about it. The main, you know, I was just thinking about the games. So I had kind of hoped that even if I didn't do the profile thing, that it would remember all of those credentials and stuff from the apps, because they're just UWP apps theoretically. And I know as a developer that there are ways of storing that stuff essentially in OneDrive, so that all of that that sort of information can transfer between different devices. And that didn't happen. And the thing that stinks about that is that for a lot of apps, you have to log in to all of those for each Xbox gamertag that you sign in with.
Ugh.
So I have to do all of that for Jen's profile, which is the one that automatically signs in and stuff, because that's the one that all the family uses, and then do it all for mine. So yeah, that was a pain, but I don't know if transferring the profile would have fixed that. I'm going to guess that it wouldn't, but I don't know for sure. Yeah. So I guess that does kind of stink. You know what doesn't stink, though? How well this thing is selling. We had a lot of concerns. Even Microsoft themselves kind of tried to set our expectations fairly low for how well this would sell. It's $500. It's twice the price of the Xbox One S. It's twice the price of a PlayStation 4. It's $100 more expensive than the PlayStation 4 Pro, which has been out for a year and theoretically has more enhanced games already. Everyone said, don't expect this to sell all that well. Yeah, everyone was wrong. Forbes is reporting that in the UK, in just the first week of sales, because it's only been a week, 80,000 units sold in the UK. 80,000 for a $500 console. That's a ton. And Microsoft is reporting that across Europe, they were seeing similar numbers in all of those regions. That's really important to note because Europe has always been a PlayStation stronghold. Like, PlayStation always does better than Xbox in Europe and especially in Japan. So to see it do really well in Europe is great news. Microsoft also said that in North America, the numbers are way higher. So it sounds like sales did way better than expected, or at least better than Microsoft publicly expected it to sell, right? And I want to say I'm not super surprised, because the thing with the Xbox One X is, and I've talked about this before, when the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 were announced, there were a lot of people that poo-pooed the Xbox One and were like, we're going PlayStation, because there was all of that information out there that the PlayStation 4 was just a little bit more powerful. Its RAM was slightly faster. That was about the only real difference, but it was enough. I mean, in addition to some other missteps that Microsoft made along the way, plus the pricing with the Kinect thing, but it was enough that a lot of the real hardcore gamers were like, my games are going to run better on the PlayStation 4. I'm going PlayStation.
Right. But well, also plus a year earlier.
Well, no, I mean, when the PS4 and the Xbox One both launched in 2013.
Oh, okay. You're not talking about the Pro.
No, I'm not talking about the Pro here. I mean, the Pro did sell well, but even the PlayStation 4 Pro didn't sell as well as the Xbox One X, even in Europe. So like we said, the One X sold 80,000 units in the first week in the UK. The PlayStation 4 Pro took 4 weeks to sell that many units in the UK. And what that tells me is the real hardcore gamers were like, huh, this box looks amazing. There is not a doubt that this box will play all of my games way better than anything else out there. And people bought it. And it sure seems like it's working out well for gamers and for Microsoft. So I'm really, really excited to see that. I think it's like, really, that's only good news for everybody, because it means that Microsoft made the right choice and they'll continue to do things like that. And it means, maybe more importantly, that developers are going to jump on board even faster to get their games enhanced for the Xbox One X. In fact, just this week, I think yesterday, Blizzard announced that Overwatch, they've decided they're going to release Xbox One X enhancements for Overwatch, which is still a huge, huge game, one that I love and can't wait to see the enhancements for. So I think we're going to just continue to see tons of support from the developers. And that was one of the biggest concerns that a lot of the media outlets had about the One X was, would it get supported? It has been, and I think it's only going to continue to increase in its support from developers.
Cool. Very cool.
All right. In some smaller news, for all Xbox One owners. You don't need an X for this. Game gifting is now available for everybody, just in time for the holidays, just in time for that gift-giving season that we all love. You can now, from your Xbox or from the Microsoft Store website, you can buy a game as a gift. And basically, there's now two buttons where there used to be one. There used to be one for buy this game. Now there's one that says buy as a gift. And when you click that, it gives you an option to put in an email address. And when you go through with that, the person that you're gifting the game to will just get an email with a code for the digital game. It's pretty simple. There is a caveat to point out here, though. You can only gift games to people in your region. If you're in the United States and you've got a friend in Germany, you can't gift a game to them. I don't really know why. I imagine it has to deal with currency conversion and all that sort of craziness. I don't know. I would imagine it's something they have planned. This seems like an issue they can iron out because Steam does it, but it doesn't work right now. And it's important to know that if you were about to do that, maybe don't gift a game to your friend overseas.
Could it be licensing?
It could be, but I don't really know for sure. There is, like, and there are warnings for this, but they're maybe not the most super obvious because they're kind of like footnote warnings that it can only be to people in your region. And it's not going to know from you putting in an email address whether that person is in your region or not. So there's no way for it to check before you do this. If you do this, though, the game can be returned. You know, Xbox now supports that ability to return games that you haven't played or have only just barely played a little bit. So you're not out your money if you accidentally do this. But just a big warning, don't try and do this yet because you can't. Another quick update. We've talked a lot about the mixed reality stuff that's come to the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, and almost all of these new mixed reality headsets are now available to purchase from HP and Dell and Acer and Asus and all these guys. I think the only one we're still waiting on, no, actually we're not. The Samsung one is now also available too. So I think they're all available now. And rolling out this week, November 15th, is the ability to access Steam VR games. So the Windows Store doesn't have a ton of VR games yet, but Steam sure does, and you should be able to access most, if not all of them, with your Windows mixed reality headsets, which are probably cheaper than an HTC Vive or an Oculus Rift. So great news for anybody who jumped on board early with the Windows mixed reality headsets. Now you've got a whole lot more games that you can play with it, like Fallout 4 VR and lots of other big name stuff. All right, we also like to talk about deals with gold every week because there's always new deals with gold every week. This week, they're terrible. Well, last week, they weren't very good. This week, they're even worse. But there's a reason for that. And that is that at the end of the week, starting Friday, November 17th, Microsoft starts their Black Friday sales a week early. You get like a week and a half for Black Friday when it comes to Microsoft. And there's some good deals. We don't know all of the game-specific deals, but if you are looking for a new Xbox, especially an Xbox One S, there's going to be some nice deals out there for you all this holiday season. The Xbox One S from the Microsoft Store is going to be starting at $189. That's crazy. There's going to be lots of different bundles. Some of them include extra controllers. I think there's going to be, I think it's $229, gets you the 1S, two controllers, and Madden 2018. Like lots of really awesome bundles this year on the 1S. In terms of hardware, the 1X, it's not going on sale. Sorry, it just came out. Don't expect to see the 1X on sale anywhere this year.
Yeah, but the 1S, I mean, that's a pretty significant, I guess it's not significant, but it's lower than we've ever seen it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've never seen the 1S below $200. I mean, maybe $199, but we've never seen it at $189, that's for sure. All right, but this isn't just hardware. There will be games on sale. We don't know what most of them will be, but they have said that some of their first party games like Forza Motorsport 7, Forza Horizon 3, Gears of War 4, Halo Wars 2, all of those games will be $20 off the current retail price. So Motorsport 7 will be 40, Horizon 3 will be 30, Halo Wars 2 will be 20, you know, some nice prices in there. And then again, starting on the 17th, going through the 27th, that's when the big digital sale starts. So that's games, but it's also movies and music. If you still feel comfortable buying movies and music from Microsoft, I guess they'll be on sale
music,
too.
Music, there's no reason not to, right? Because you get to keep it. But movies?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be buying Microsoft movies right now.
Yeah, I don't think I would recommend buying movies from Microsoft unless you get them for dirt cheap or something and maybe have some other way to convert them, but I don't think there is a way. But yeah, music is safe because you just get MP3s. That is, you're right. That's totally safe. On games, you're looking at up to 65% off, and across games and movies and music, they're talking about over 500 titles being on sale. So expect some really, really nice deals on digital game sales coming up this Friday. And let us know what you plan to pick up. I'm going to be looking for Project Cars 2. I'm not sure what else. We'll see. I can always be tempted to buy new games. And you get extra deals, extra savings, and early access. The access with the sale starting on the 17th is only if you're an Xbox Live Gold member. If you're not, I'm not sure why you're not, but if you're not, don't worry. Because they're going to do that thing where you can buy a month of Xbox Live Gold for $1. That's $9 less than usual. And then get access to all that stuff. So that's how you're going to get access to all that. And then a little bit more hardware savings out there. If you've been thinking about getting a Design Lab controller, and this is a great time of year for that, because maybe you're thinking of gifting a Design Lab controller to somebody, $15 off during this sale. So that's significant on an $80 controller.
So what that brings it down to about 65, and the normal would be 50 if you bought it.
Well, MSRP of a controller is 60, but they'll be $40 or less during the holidays.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's still really cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then if all of that is still more money than you want to spend, Games with Gold, that's the free games that you get every month. All month long on Xbox One, you've still got access to Trackmania Turbo. And then starting November 16th, so the end of this week, you'll get Tales from the Borderlands. I'm excited about that one. And then on the 360 side, you're going to get Deadfall Adventures. It's still a game I know very little about. And even my hardcore gamer friends had never heard of this game. So I don't know. It's free. Richard will download it.
Oh, absolutely.
Why not? Just keep adding to the list of games that Richard will never, ever play.
Yep. Yep, exactly. But, you know, digital hoarder. So that's how it is. All right. And that is it for our gaming news. So there's a bit other news that we want to talk about. The first is some additional Microsoft news. You know, we've talked in the past about the Microsoft Surface Book 2, and that is now available for pre-order. We're not going to go into a whole lot of detail because we've talked about this in the past, but these are not cheap machines. These are convertibles. No. They start at about $2,000 for the 13.5-inch and $2,500 for the 15-inch. That's the starting price. So,
well, that's the starting price with a dedicated graphics card.
Okay, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
I think otherwise they start at 1500.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. In any event, these are expensive, but they are convertibles. And I have to tell you, I have a client who has actually a client where their employees have some of these devices, and it's really the first ones that I saw in the wild. Like, I've never seen one of these on a plane. Never.
Yeah.
But I have to say that one of the things that they were telling me is that this device is great on a plane because you have a work computer that you can use. And then if you end up in a situation where your seat configuration just does not let you actually sit your computer open and work on it, you still have the tablet that you can work on or use as a media consumption device.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So something nice to think about if you're in the market for a laptop. These are beautiful devices. It's still the same hinge. I wish they had revised the hinge a little bit, but they are available for pre-order now with deliveries supposedly starting on November 16th, which is probably the day you're hearing this. I'll be curious right. if they actually hit that target.
I think they normally do. I think
All right.
they've been pretty good at hitting those dates for hardware releases.
All right. Yeah, fair point. All right. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about is that a product that you've reviewed, Josh,
mm-hmm.
the Axum Q, and that's the wireless kind of media hub that can function with all of your different HDMI devices. They had announced a UHD version, and just today, the day that we're recording, we found out that this was honored as a CES 2018 Innovation Award honoree. Pretty
cool.
Yeah,
that is awesome news. And it's because they, well, it's not only because, but it's primarily because they're the first WiSA compliant product to support multiple 4K sources. And just to clarify, for those who don't remember, it's an AV receiver with six HDMI inputs and completely wireless speakers. You just plug the speakers into to power outlets. You don't have to run speaker wire to all of them all over your house. So it's really cool. I like Richard said, I reviewed the first generation device. It did up to 1080p with 3D support. And I loved it. I thought it sounded good. The convenience was off the charts with it being, you know, wireless speakers. It sure makes setting up those surrounds way, way easier. And now the UHD one that supports UHD and HDR is coming out really soon. And as one more reminder, if you bought the original Axum Q, you're going to get this one for free. For free. This is costing them many hundreds of dollars. So that's pretty awesome. And it's great to see that kind of support behind their product and to see a major consumer technology association. In fact, that's what they're called. giving them an award, giving Axum an award for this product. So very cool. Congratulations, Axum.
Yeah, very cool. All right. And then finally, I wanted to mention that there's been a lot of hubbub over the last couple of days about the Harmony Link from Logitech. Logitech announced about, I guess, a couple of weeks ago that they were going to basically end the life of the Harmony Link. And if you don't remember what this is, I talked about it on this show about 6 years ago. 6 years ago. And at the time, I bought it, I tested it out, and I liked it so much that I returned it.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So I really felt like it wasn't quite there yet and didn't do everything that I would want a product like it to do. And what it was trying to be was an entirely mobile-based remote. So you could use your phone or your tablet as a remote. And then in addition to that, they had a number of services that provided rich content about the shows that you could select. So you had thumbnails like you might see in the TiVo app, and you had program information, much more than you might just generally see on a program guide. But it didn't have a program guide, and it didn't control all of my devices as well as I wanted it to. And frankly, I just don't like not having physical buttons when I'm sitting in front of the television. So it didn't work for me, and I returned it. Well, 6 years later, believe it or not, this thing still exists, even when the Harmony Hub has been out there for, I don't know, maybe 4 years, something like that. And the Harmony Hub is a far more robust product with many, many, many more capabilities. It doesn't have the rich data about the programs, but that was never really its intent. It was intended to be a remote only. Logitech eventually realized that the Harmony Link isn't going anywhere, so they're shutting it down. And everybody went insane. And frankly, I didn't know that everybody included a whole lot of people. Like, I'm surprised that they sold enough of these that there was an outcry. But apparently there was. And so Logitech's made good on it. And they said, all right, if you have a Harmony Link, we'll give you a Harmony Hub. You don't have to be in warranty. Just we'll give you a Harmony Hub. Now, that's not what they were originally going to do. They were only going to support people who were in warranty. And even that is kind of reasonable, I think. But instead, they've said that this $99 6-year-old device that they're not going to support anymore to please everybody, to shut everybody up, they're going to give a Harmony Hub. That's amazing. And I need to hand it to Logitech for really stepping up and doing this right, listening to users that were unhappy about this. Frankly, I'm really, really surprised.
Oh, yeah. I never would have expected any company to do that. It's a dinosaur of a product.
Yeah. Yeah. 6-year-old remote product. So good for them. And if you have one and you're still using it, please let us know. I want to know what you liked about the Harmony Link, because I just didn't find that thing, whatever it is that you liked.
Yeah. Yeah, because remote, using your phone as a remote, just it's not great. It's not great at all. So just to clarify for the listeners, if they bought like the newer smart hub, or sorry, the Logitech hub, I can't even get the name right of all of these things.
Yeah.
The thing that I bought that has a little smart hub thing that you put in your living room, wherever, and it blasts the commands out, and it has remotes that work with it. That still works. Like, that's not what we're talking about here, right?
That is not what we're talking about. We're talking about an old product that only ever worked with an app. It is not the Harmony Hub. If you have something called a Harmony Hub, this is not it. That is not dying. That lives on. That, in fact, is what they're going to give you to replace this. If your product allows you to control things like, I don't know, your Hue lights or your Insteon lights, that is not a Harmony Link.
Okay. If people have the link and they want to get their free hub, do they have to reach out to Logitech to get it?
They do. This isn't something that's going to happen automatically. They need to go online and request that they get an update. I'll seek out that location so that we can get the information in our show notes for folks.
Okay. People aren't just going to get a Christmas present from Logitech of a new hub.
Well, if they registered, they may, but how many people actually register products anymore? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I don't bother. Do you?
Less people than the number of people who complain about 6-year-old, 10-year-old products going away.
I am sure that is true. All right. So that is it for our news tonight. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in our entertainment centers. And I have a lot more going on than just stuff I'm watching. I have not really watched that much this week compared to how I normally would. So I had mentioned that I had connected my Atmos speakers, and I was really happy with the experience with the above speakers. What I hadn't done yet, because somehow I always manage to lose the microphone that comes with my AV receivers, I hadn't yet run the automatic configuration that optimizes the speakers for you. And so I was just running on the default configuration, none the wiser. And I knew that at some point I wanted to do that. So this weekend I went looking for my microphone, and I finally found it, and I ran the automatic configuration. So good thing I did, because in addition to making it sound even better than it did before, I also found out that three, not just the two new ones that I installed. Oh, no, they were. But in addition to that, another one of my surround speakers was out of phase. And what that means is that I had my positive and negative speaker leads attached to the wrong pole, which I don't know how I accomplished, because I specifically remember going online to check. Okay, now the one with the line on it, that goes to the positive one or the negative? I can never remember. So I checked and I still got it wrong.
It doesn't matter which one it goes to, as long as you put it to the same thing on the receiver as you do on the speaker.
That's true. That would that would suggest that I remembered when I connected one end where, and that's not how things worked. Anyway, so I fixed that. Everything is good. I'm really happy. If you have the ability to run this automatic configuration and you don't have the ear that you can just do it on your own, I highly recommend you do it. At the very least, check to make sure that your speakers are not out of phase, because if they are, then you end up with sounds that are just not balanced right, because you have stuff kind of canceling each other out. You don't want that happening.
Right. And no one has an ear that can do it as well as these microphones do.
Yeah.
No one. Just do the setup.
Do it. Just do it. Speaking of setup, I reset my Apple TV. I'll tell you why in a minute. I was so angry after I reset my Apple TV. Because I had to re-authenticate every single app, every single network app, every single streaming service, anything that requires re-authenticating with either the service itself or my provider. Why? Because Verizon is one of the big guys. And the big guys have decided that no, they're not going to play with Apple's built-in mechanism to do single sign-on.
Why does it depend on your cable provider?
Because they have the ability to opt in or not. So let's say you're Verizon, all right? You run Verizon and you are currently using TV Anywhere, which is the solution that they use to handle basically OAuth across their different services. And Apple comes to you and says, well, we really want you to use our OAuth solution. Maybe Apple's isn't OAuth, I don't know. But we want you to use our authentication solution. You don't have to. There's work that you have to do to make that happen. Right. And even though, as Verizon, you have more resources to do it than all of the small guys, the dozens of small guys that have already done it, you're like, no, but we're Verizon. Apple's not going to push us around. We might be able to come up with something different of our own. So we're working on that. And in fact, that's the case. The big guys are working on a single sign-on solution that will be more cohesive between themselves, but still isn't going to work with Apple TV in the way that Apple TV can just, boom, log in if the app and the provider agrees. What a pain. And I'm sitting there cursing. Everyone's wondering, what is going on? I'm like, this is the crap that any general consumer is expected to go through when they buy a streaming device. Can you believe this?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. With Apple TV, can you at least use your iPhone as a keyboard?
Yes. Yes, okay. I can. So that makes that process easier. And of course, many of these services have authentication through activation codes. But what that means,
right,
that actually makes it harder with the Apple TV, because what that means is that you're not just signing in with your user ID and password using the keyboard on your phone. No. First, you're having to go to the provider's website, and then you're having to select what device you have, and then you select what service provider you use, and then you enter the code. And if that agrees, then you're asked to log in with your service provider's ID, and you have to do that every single time. It's actually more work than if you just logged into the Apple TV. It is ridiculous. And Verizon and Comcast and Spectrum and any of the other big guys that are holding out on this, stop being jerks about it. You need to fix this.
But it only helps you. It only helps Apple TV people. It doesn't help Roku users. It doesn't help Fire TV, Xbox, any of that stuff. It only helps Apple TV users.
So that may be true, but I have to imagine that if there's a solution that can be put in place for Apple, that this could be adopted for other devices as well. Now, that could very well be what Verizon, Comcast, and others.
That stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't honestly remember if this is one of the things that they said they were going to make kind of like open for others to use. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I have it in my head that they were, but I don't remember. In any event, we have to solve this problem. This is a huge hurdle. If you're not the kind of person that is going to be crawling behind your AV receiver and like shucking cables from one port to another, there's no way you're going to be doing this crap. All right, rant over. The reason that I was doing this is because I'm testing a new remote right now. The folks from Neo, and I don't know if anyone's familiar with this, but Neo was a Kickstarter startup producing a home and AV control universal remote with a touchscreen and physical buttons. And it's a beautiful device. They have been working on this for 3 years, and they've sent me a remote to test and to review. And so I was setting that up, and I noticed that I was having problems with the Apple TV. And I've had other problems with control codes from Harmony with the Apple TV. So I figured the best thing to do was to reset it to get it all working again. And in fact, that got it working. So in the meantime, I am going to be reviewing this remote, and I expect I'll be talking about this a little bit more in future episodes here, as well as on Home On, because it really touches into both spaces. It's pretty slick what they've done.
And how much is that?
So the Kickstarter was for, I believe, $250, I think, $249. Might have been $299. I'm not exactly sure. This is a review unit on loan, so I didn't have to pay for it to review right. it. But I will follow up and find out what the retail price on this is going to be, and we'll talk about that in a future episode.
Okay. Cool. I'm always interested to hear your take on remotes.
Well, particularly when they're touchscreen, because you know how I feel about that.
Right, exactly.
And because it has physical buttons on it, I wanted to give this a try, and I spoke with the CEO of the company at Cydia, and he talked me into it. I'm like, all right, I'll try it. We'll see how it goes. So now another thing that I've been wanting to do is I've been wanting to think about a more discreet solution for my front speakers. I have some really nice front speakers, but they're too high because it's the only place that I can put them, given the configuration of the room they're in. And they're blatantly in your face. Like one of them is on my mantle, and I can't tell you how much grief I take about that. So I've been considering maybe getting a sound bar for my front channels, and only the front channels. And I'm starting to look at different sound bars for that. And Samsung has a nice sound bar. There are a number of other companies that have really nice devices. JBL has a nice one. I'm actually considering a Sonos soundbar, the Playbar. And the Sonos Playbar would be really nice if it would work for me, because it's actually a 3.0 speaker. So it would be all the front channels, left, right, and center. And it would give me Sonos playback capabilities in this room where I otherwise don't have it, my family room.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm not sure about is if you can use a Sonos Playbar as your front speakers with your receiver, and then use your own speakers for everything else. And I've spoken with Sonos support And the answer they've given me is, you know what? We're not entirely sure. But
what?
Try it. Let us know. And if it doesn't work, you can always return it.
No. $700 device. No way.
Hey, I'm willing to try it. I'm totally willing to try it. So I don't know if I'm going to do this now or if I'll wait until the holidays. But this is something that I think I'm going to pursue and see if this works for me. They said the one thing might be that it might end up being a little bit out of sync, but I also know that my receiver has the ability to adjust synchronization of sound per speaker. So I may be able to solve that connects? Problem.
How does it connect?
Yes, it connects by HDMI. So basically what I would do is I would have my auxiliary HDMI monitor, which exists on the receiver I have, outputting, you know, have that output, and that would go into this speaker. No, wait, no. You know what? I'm wrong. It's not HDMI. Sorry. It's Toslink. So it's a
and you have Toslink out from your receiver?
Yeah, because that's just a digital audio out. So yes, I do have that.
Huh. Okay.
So I might give it a try.
That's freaking weird, but okay.
All right. So that is it on the hardware front. On the content front, This Is Us, man. You need to catch up to This Is Us. This last episode was an adoption episode. Oh my God, it was good. It was
I'm
so
not even
good.
In the season.
I was
still
a basket case at the end
one.
Of it. trying to keep up with The Flash and Arrow, though for some reason they had two episodes of The Flash last week. I'm not really sure why that, or The Arrow last week. Not sure why that was. Shameless has started. I think this is season 7. As soon as I saw that was on, I was very excited to watch that. Dirk Gently, and I mentioned that I was going to watch the CMA Awards, and I did. That was enjoyable as always. I watched Cars 3 this weekend, and Cars 3 is a Dolby Atmos film, and man, did that sound good with those overhead speakers.
Nice.
But interestingly, by default, that was not the soundtrack that was selected.
What?
How stupid is that?
How does it not know?
I don't know. I don't understand. Every other disc that I put in knows that I have Atmos. This one either doesn't bother adjusting for that, or just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand. Made no sense to me. No sense at all. And I also wanted to mention that I received, I think I said this last week, I received the UHD discs for Westworld, and I want to rewatch that before the new season starts early next year. So I decided to watch the old Westworld and Future World movies. I forgot how good the original Westworld movie was. For its time, it was really good. Future World, terrible. Oh, so bad. So bad. But Westworld was actually really good. And I also forgot that this is a story written by Michael Crichton, and he directed the film.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not either. I totally forgot about that. All right. And one final thing. I mentioned that I need a new music service since I left Spotify. I'm trying Deezer. I'm not really sure why I decided on Deezer, but I decided to try Deezer. They have a 1 month free trial, so I'm trying it. Eh. Nothing special.
Does that work with like your Amazon voice devices and stuff like that?
It doesn't work with Sonos? The Amazon devices, but it does work with Sonos. So I can't ask my Echoes to play Deezer stuff on the Sonos speakers. So I think what I'm going to ultimately end up doing is probably using the Amazon Unlimited service, but I figured I'd give this a try.
Mm-hmm. Amazon's library is just smaller than Spotify's.
Well, it is.
Everybody's library is smaller than Spotify's.
Yeah, it is. But it's not bad. It's pretty good. And I still use it for the music that they have available through Prime Music for free. Mm-hmm. All right, that finally is it for me in my entertainment center. Josh, other than playing Xbox One, what have you been doing?
Well, I did briefly mention that I started playing Final Fantasy 15 on my Xbox One X, and I'm not super far in. I'm maybe 5 hours in, and this is like a 35 plus hour game probably. So I'm not very far in yet, but boy, it looks gorgeous, and it's been pretty fun so far. So we'll see how that goes. I'm not, like, I've never finished a Final Fantasy game. You know, this is a beloved franchise by so many people. I've just never been able to do it. The last one that I really tried was Final Fantasy 13, and I got 10 hours in, and I just couldn't possibly have cared less about the characters. And I'm not playing a 40-hour game if I don't care about the characters in the story. It's not happening. So hopefully this story will work for me, because I'm impressed with the gameplay so far. We also, this weekend, went out and saw Thor Ragnarok. This was Jen's idea. Yes. This was Jen's idea. She wanted to go see this. I said, of course you want to go see it. It's Thor. And she's like, man, that's not really the main reason.
I know it wasn't your idea. But so, I'm with Jen.
Let me remind our listeners how I've felt about most of the Marvel superhero movies. Okay. The Avengers movies were good. The Captain America movies were good. The rest of them, I was like, yeah. Like, even the Iron Man movies, I never really got that into. Thor was the same. Like, I just couldn't get into this movie. I was kind of bored. It's got a ton of humor. A ton of humor. Like, way more than, like, the previous Avengers movies and all that stuff. Way more jokes and stuff like that. It seems constant. Lon Paul wants to know about the Hulk movie. The Hulk movies, those were always terrible.
I didn't even bother seeing those.
Yeah, you shouldn't. They were terrible. All of them. Yeah, so there is constant humor in this movie, which felt kind of weird. Like, there's always a little bit in the Avengers and stuff like that, but this was constant humor. Like, I didn't come to see a comedy. I came to see an action superhero movie. And I don't know, the story just didn't work for me. Really, none of it worked for me. I could have gone and seen any other movie and probably been happier. But and I'm saying this right as Jen is walking past and giving me the pouty face for not liking Thor. She really enjoyed it. So if you loved all of those other Marvel superhero movies, don't listen to me. I they're just not for me.
So for people who have seen and enjoyed the Marvel Cinematic Universe films, I understand that this is one of the favorites right now.
Hmm. Okay.
So right. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. And I don't know if you or the rest of our listeners will remember, but when Jen and I first went through and watched a whole bunch of these Marvel movies in preparation for, I think it was the second Avengers movie, I had zero interest in watching the Thor movies. I just did not care about Thor as a character. And then we watched, I think we only watched the first one, and I actually really enjoyed it. I liked it. I didn't like it more than Captain America. That one was my favorite, but I liked it more than one or two of the Iron Man movies. It far exceeded my expectations, but not this one.
Well, they established really good characters in the first film, I think. I think that helped a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Lon Paul in the chat says he thought there was too much humor too, but he liked it. He liked it. All right. And then on the hardware front, other than just the Xbox One X, I have a new device in for testing. It was graciously sent to us by Harman Kardon. Spoilers, it's the Invoke. We've got the Cortana speaker in the house for testing. Unfortunately, I just got it yesterday, so I haven't gotten very much time at all to put it through its paces. I know that it'll play my music from Spotify. I've done that a couple of times. I know that it'll turn my Instant lights on and off. It does that quite well, and it makes me quite happy. That all is good. I'm not ready to give you an analysis on sound quality. I want to compare it to other things first, and I haven't been able to do that. It doesn't sound terrible. I'll tell you that. There's one kind of downside to it, and that is this thing overhears the command word way more often than the Google Home devices that I have. And maybe that's just...
But do you mean like as in false positives?
Yes. For example, I bet this, because this is in the same room with me right now. At the very beginning of the show, I said, "Hey, Richard." Oh, it didn't do it this time. But the first time I did it, it perked up. And it did it another time while we were recording the show tonight. I don't remember what I even said, but it perked up. And it's done it a couple of other times for me just in the day that I've had it. So that's a little annoying. But one thing that they do that's different from the Google Assistant devices is with Google, and I'm not sure about the Amazon devices, I think it works the same way though. You say the wake phrase and then it makes a noise and then you speak your command. With the Cortana ones, you just say it all in one sentence. So I'm sorry if anybody's got one and it's within listening range. I could say, "Hey Cortana, turn on my desk lamp," and it's doing it right now. I don't have to pause. You don't have to pause for it to acknowledge the wake word. You just say the whole thing. And yep, that feels more natural. I don't know if that's something you can change on the Google Home devices or on the Echoes. But you don't have to pause. And by default, it doesn't even give you an audible key or cue that it heard you if you do pause. The little light on the top will light up, but if you're not looking at it, you won't actually even know if it's listening. They just want you to say it. So right. Lon Paul is saying in the chat that with Google, you can just say the whole thing. I actually didn't know that because it kind of trains you not to say the whole thing.
And Amazon's devices work the same way.
The same way as?
You can just say it all together and it picks it up. So basically you talk and it's kind of just, since it's always listening, as soon as it catches what you say, you know, whether it's quote rewinding a little bit to catch what you said or all, you know, just as soon as it hears it, boom, catching it automatically, you don't have to pause. You can continue going. My experience, however, is that it's not always as accurate when I do it that way.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That totally makes sense. So by next week, I should have a much more thorough explanation or use case and hands-on with this device and how well it's working out for me and a comparison to the Google Home and some other stuff. So look for that on next week's show, probably.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, that wraps things up. Before we're out of here, one quick announcement. I have a new post out on The Spoon. This is an article that I wrote for the food tech blog, The Spoon, called "Don't Brick My Fridge." Yeah, that may sound familiar. It's familiar because that's the name of the panel that I hosted at the Smart Kitchen Show. Turns out, same people behind The Spoon as behind the Smart Kitchen Show. And I volunteered to write an article about it. And I actually did this for my company because, if you recall, I was at that summit representing my company. We talk about and help companies with digital transformation. And the Smart Kitchen is a perfect digital transformation story. So if you're interested in what I had to say there, check that out. We'll have a link in the show notes. And if you're really eager to see or hear, there's video there, the panel that I did called "Don't Brick My Fridge." It's a little bit of a sneak. That's out there already. My episode of Home On with that session is not yet.
Come on, Richard.
I know. It's been a week.
You could have been doing that instead of watching the CMA Awards.
I could have, although CMA Awards is something that you can have on in the background, which is basically what I did. Right. Anyway.
All right, well, cool. I'll definitely have to go and check that out over at The Spoon. Well, if you guys would like to get a hold of us, you can do that in a lot of ways. We're on Twitter pretty frequently. Richard can be found at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is the weird one. It's at DigiMediaZone, DIGI MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDMZ. And then, of course, we've got our other podcast to listen to. Richard just hinted at Home On that the next episode is going to be that Smart Kitchen Summit episode. So any idea when we can expect to hear that one?
I'm not making any commitments. No, soon. It'll be soon. It'll be soon. I just, okay. I am sorry. I'm just, yeah.
No, I get it, man. I totally get it. And Home On is always worth the wait.
Oh, thank you. And you have a show. You have your own show, Story Players, and you had a new episode out last week.
Well, sort of within the last week or so, we did release two episodes because we finished up our Mass Effect Andromeda series. And then just a few days later, we played What Remains of Edith Finch. And that was a fun game, guys. You should check that one out. Maybe fun isn't the right word, but some really great and interesting story stuff going on in What Remains of Edith Finch. So if you're into story-driven video games, you'll definitely want to check out Story Players over at the DMZ. And please throw us some stars over on Apple Podcast and share it with your friends. We would love to get more listeners there, and we want to hear your feedback. So if you're listening to Story Players, send us a note, what you think about the shows, what you think about the games that you're playing and that we're playing also.
Now, I have a question for you, Josh. You finished Mass Effect Andromeda.
Mm-hmm.
Are you wrapping up season one, or is there more coming for season one?
There's still a little bit more coming because we can't figure it all out because we don't know release schedules, but we're not going to call season one. We don't want to call season one complete until we've been able to finish Life is Strange Before the Storm. So we're still waiting on the third and final episode of that, which we're expecting in December. So you can expect at least one more episode of Story Players in November for another one-off game like we did for Tacoma or What Remains for Edith Finch. That will be coming soon. I need to say that again. You can probably expect another one-off game in December, maybe, in addition to Life is Strange Before the Storm, just because we don't know when that episode of the game is going to be released. And we've got plenty of games that we want to be playing. So you can probably expect one more of that and Life is Strange Before the Storm. And then we'll call season one done. So we're not picking up another huge game like Mass Effect Andromeda was until season two, which will be, early next year at some point. But like Home On, we're not giving any dates for that just yet.
All right, that's fair. I do want to throw one more thing in before we're out of here. I teased a couple weeks ago, actually I've been teasing over the course of the last couple of weeks, that I'm working on another podcast project. This is what happens. Everything else suffers. So I just heard our first episode zero teaser episode for that, and it was so much fun. We have, I think, such good chemistry together as a team doing the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. So keep an ear out. I will be announcing it very shortly.
Awesome. Can't wait. Can't wait at all. All right. Well, if you like this show, then you should join us as we record it live. That's normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, but it's not always. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure, because we always tweet about when the show will be recorded live. We use Mixer. It works out great. There's video and a chat room, so you can participate with us like Lon Paul and GP3 and so many other people in the chat room tonight did. And you can also just subscribe to us on Mixer and you'll be instantly notified as soon as we go live and whenever we go live. But that's going to do it for episode 430. He's Richard Gunther and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.